Muir goes into Insects and Spiders and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A centipede came home late after a night on the town. Didn't want to wake his wife, thought he'd better sneak upstairs. Poor thing, spent all night getting his shoes off.
Excuse me. What kind of dog's that you've got?
This dog, he's an entomologist.
Entomologist?
Mm.
I thought an entomologist was a collector of rare insects.
That's right. There were two flies in a post office walking over a license application form, and suddenly one of them started running for all he was worth. The second fly caught up. Said, hey, what'd you do that for? And the first one said, didn't you see? It said, tear along the dotted line.
Hey, Alfred, guess what? I've got a new idea for my flea circuses.
Keep it under your hat.
Tell me, while you were on holiday in Greece, how did you find the mosquitoes?
I didn't, actually. They found me.
Did you hear about the Irish tadpole?
No.
Turned into a butterfly. And did you, while we're on the subject, did you hear about the Irish woodworm?
Irish woodworm? Yeah.
Was found dead in a brick. Do you know, I once met a man who tried to cross a turkey with a centipede.
Really? Why on earth did he do that?
So that everyone could have a drumstick. Two caterpillars were sunning themselves on a leaf in the garden when suddenly a shadow passed overhead and they looked up to see a huge butterfly fluttering about over them. Well, one thing's for sure, said the first caterpillar, you'll never get me up in one of those things.
Human beings on the whole, and including me, aren't very keen on insects and spiders and other creepy crawlies. Bugs always seem to be around just when you don't want them, as Bill Vaughan observed.
We hope that when the insects take over the world, they'll remember with gratitude how we took them along on all our picnics.
For mere mortals, it's pretty hard to get away from them. Here's a couplet from a famous Salvation Army song dating from the turn of the century.
There may be flies on you and me, but there are no flies on Jesus.
Yes, they've always been a nuisance. Here's John Aubrey writing about the 17th century philosopher Thomas Hobbes.
In his old age, he was very bald, which claimed a veneration. Yet within door, he used to study and sit bareheaded and said he never took cold in his head, but that the greatest trouble was to keep off the flies from pitching on the baldness.
What a pity Thomas Hobbes hadn't heard of the remedy for his affliction recommended in this famous letter to the magazine Good Shopping.
When my husband reads in bed on warm nights, he puts a colander over his head. He says it keeps off the flies, shades his eyes from the light, and lets in the air all at the same time.
Would really, wouldn't it? Before we proceed any further with our investigation of insects, perhaps we ought to hear a few interesting facts on the subject.
I'll tell you a really interesting fact. It's about the whale. Do you know the whale is not really a fish? It's an insect. And it lives on bananas.
The whale is an insect. I've never heard such rubbish.
I know. That was a joke. I made it up. It wasn't a fact. It was a joke. But I'll tell you what is a very interesting fact. It's about the grasshopper. The interesting fact about the grasshopper is its disproportionate leaping ability, due to its powerful hind legs. Hop, 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 it goes all over arable land. That is land what is actually tilled by Arabs. And the interesting fact about your Arab is that he can live for a whole year on one grain of rice. Imagine living for a whole year on one grain of rice. It's incredible.
A whole year on one grain of rice?
No. It's the mosquito that can live for a whole year on one grain of rice. Now, I get those two muddled up because they're next to each other in the dictionary.
What are?
Mosquitoes and mosques. I'll tell you the really interesting fact about the grasshopper. Do you want to hear a really interesting fact about the grasshopper?
Nope.
Well, if the giraffe could leap pound for pound as high as the grasshopper, they'd avoid a lot of trouble.
Shall I tell you something? You're one of the most boring, tedious, uninteresting, monotonous, flat-headed, cloth-eared, swivel-eyed, fornicating little gits I ever laid on.
Is that a fact? How very interesting.
Peter Cook and John Cleese. For most people in this country, the idea of eating insects is abhorrent, though I'm sure in our time we've all inadvertently crunched through a few. The Victorian explorer Mansfield Parkins certainly found this a problem when he slept on the deck of a ship sailing to North Africa.
The facetious cockroaches amused themselves greatly at our expense, for awaking in the night we were sure to find one poking its head into each nostril, others in the ears, mouths, etc. It was almost impossible to drink from the myriads which swarmed on the mouths of the leather bottles. The food we ate, too, and everything else was full of these disgusting insects. And I seldom sat down to dinner without eating two or three by mistake, especially if stewed prunes, to which they nearly assimilate in size and color, happened to be served.
Even those brave gentlemen who specialized in eating strange things weren't that keen on insects. Augustus Hare recalled the experience of one enthusiastic experimenter.
Dr. Buckland used to say that he'd eaten his way straight through the whole animal creation, and that the worst thing was a mole. That was utterly horrible. Dr. Buckland afterwards told Lady Lyndhurst there was one thing even worse than a mole, and that was a bluebottle fly.
You can hear the crunch. To take the taste of that out of our mouths, perhaps we ought to hear a rather more heartwarming insect story.
When I was a little boy, I wanted a dog desperately. And we had no money. I was a tiny kid. And my parents couldn't get me a dog because we just didn't have the money. So they got me, instead of a dog, they told me it was a dog. They got me an ant. And I didn't know any better, you know. I thought it was a dog. I was a dumb kid. Called it Spot. I trained it, you know. I'm coming home late one night, and Sheldon Finkelstein tried to bully me. Spot was with me. And I said, kill! Sheldon stepped on my dog.
Woody Allen. Ogden Nash wrote a poem about the ant.
The ant has made himself illustrious through constant industry industrious. So what? Would you be calm and placid if you were full of formic acid?
There are plenty of insects, of course, who stop us from feeling calm and placid, particularly those that bite. A word of caution from an ancient proverb.
Who sleepeth with dogs shall rise with fleas.
But we aren't the only ones with that problem, according to Jonathan Swift.
So naturalists observe, a flea hath smaller fleas that on him prey, and these have smaller fleas to bite them, and so proceed ad infinitum.
Well, fleas are undoubtedly pests, There were plenty of other insects to plague us, particularly those of us who like gardening. W.C. Seller and R.J. Yeatman, the authors of 1066 and all that, provided advice in another of their books, Garden Rubbish, on how to deal with some well-known garden pests. Firstly, the woolly aphis.
Send it to the laundry. When it comes back, send it to the wash again. After two or three goes, it will shrink so tight onto itself that it will suffocate.
Blackcurrant mite.
Risk it. It mightn't.
Leather jacket grub.
Attacks roots of grass. Employ treachery, thus erect miniature cloakroom with minute pegs on edge of lawn. Before getting down to work, grubs will naturally hang up jackets. Now is your chance. Confiscate all jackets. Pneumonia, finish.
Of course, with some pests, like woodworm, you have to resort to more extreme methods.
Hello, Town Hall. Give me pest control, please. Look, I've got rather a bad case of woodworm in my table. I'd like you to come along and investigate it. Will you send someone along, please? Thank you.
Gibbon Trust insecticide. Where's the wine?
What?
The wine, the wood wine.
Oh, the worm. It's over in that table over there.
Okay, man, surround him. Was he alone?
I beg your pardon?
Was he alone or did he have a broad with him?
I don't know.
Would you recognize him if you saw him again?
Perhaps.
Okay, stick around, Mac. We may need you.
Hey, Captain, there's something moving in the left leg.
Okay. Hello? All right, Wayne. We and I are in there. Are you coming quietly?
Did you hear anything,
Lil? I thought I heard something coughing, Lil.
I can see you, Wayne.
Who's there?
This is Lieutenant Gibbontruss.
Gibbontruss? He's from the Federal Insecticide Bureau. I once ate his kid brother's rocking horse, and he's sworn to get even with me, but I ain't done yet.
All right, Wayne. Are you coming out, or do I have to come in and get you?
Come and get me, big mouth. Remember the rocking horse? Ever wonder what happened to your sister's wooden leg?
Okay, Crunkmeyer, say your prayers.
Hey, Captain, why don't we give the kid a break?
What?
Let's try the beetle.
The beetle?
The beetle.
Okay, the priest. There's a beetle here wants a word with you, Coughinwood.
It's Father O'Colorado. Come out! Me boy, it's no good.
Keep away, Father. This is no place for a garden priest.
Oh, keep off the wood, me boy. Go back to the potatoes like your dear old dad.
I can't give it up now, Father. Not now I've tasted real mahogany.
Oh, you're on the hard stuff.
Get behind the sofa, Father, or you'll get hit.
God bless you, me termites. Good luck.
Russian men, when I give the order, we move in, okay?
Okay.
Right. All right, Coughinwood, this boot's got your number on it.
I'm done for, Lil. This time I'm done for.
Oh, Coughinwood. Coughinwood.
This time I caught the boot for real.
Oh. I'll wait for you, Coughinwood. I'll wait forever.
You stupid broad, I'm dying, dying.
Well, I'll still wait, Coffin Lid. How long are you going to be?
Oh, I'm going now.
Oh, goodbye, Coffin Lid.
I'm going.
Goodbye.
But I'm dying. But I'm proud that I'm dying an all-American bug. Oh,
he's dead, Captain.
Yeah. You know, I like this job, but sometimes I feel like I'd like to do something creative.
Marty Feldman and Company. Mind you, it's probably still worse to have yourself infected rather than your furniture. Here's an uncomfortable entry from the diary of the Reverend John Tomlinson, written in 1718.
The Bishop of Durham's lady, once paying a visit to the new mayor, while her coach stood at the door, someone put a ball of hair full of lice onto the seat. They ran up her back and to her neck. She was forced to strip. The bishop would give £40 to know the person.
Nobody wants to use him again on another lady. Getting rid of insects is big business, and there are plenty of patent preparations on the market to do the job. Their manufacturers make all kinds of claims for them. Here's a quotation from one bottle label.
Flies coming into contact with this preparation of DDT die without hope of recovery.
Another method of dealing with troublesome insects is to divert them to another target. Thomas Babington Macaulay recalled this advice on mosquitoes from Bobus Smith, the brother of the Reverend Sidney Smith.
Always, sir, manage to have at your table some fleshy, blooming young writer or cadet just come out, that the mosquitoes may stick to him and leave the rest of the company alone.
For many people, the most frightening of all the creepy crawlies isn't an insect at all.
I have fought a grizzly bear, tracked a cobra to its lair, killed a crocodile who dared to cross my path. But the thing I really dread when I've just got out of bed is to find that there's a spider in the bath. I've no fear of wasps or bees, mosquitoes only tease. I rather like a cricket on the hearth. But my blood runs cold to meet in pyjamas and bare feet with a great big hairy spider in the bath. I have faced a charging bull in Barcelona.
I have dragged a mountain lioness from her cub.
I've restored a mad gorilla to its owner. But I don't dare face that tub. Oh, what a frightful looking beast, half an inch across at least. It would frighten even Superman or Garth. There's contempt it can't disguise in the little beady eyes of the spider sitting glowering in the bath. It ignores my every lunge with the back brush and the sponge. I have bombed it with a present from Penarth. It just rolls into a ball, doesn't seem to mind at all, and simply goes on squatting in the bath. For hours we have been locked in endless struggle. I have lured it to the deep end by the drain. At last I think I've washed it down the plug-o. But here it comes a-crawling up the chain. Now it's time for me to shave, though my nerves will not behave, and there's bound to be a fearful aftermath. So before I cut my throat, I shall leave this final note, driven to it by the spider in the bath.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. The marital habits of spiders are also a bit disturbing. A verse from Ivor F.C. Treby.
The female spider can't abide her husband till he's tucked inside her.
Even more frightening, perhaps, to look at than the spider is one of the strangest and most exotic creatures of the insect kingdom, the praying mantis. Here's a poem on the subject by Ogden Nash.
From whence arrived the praying mantis? From outer space or lost Atlantis? I glimpse the grim green metal mug that masks this pseudo-saintly bug. Orthopterous, also carnivorous, and faintly whisper, Lord, deliver us.
Perhaps, after all, we ought to move, and swiftly, onto the one insect which has had a much better press than all the others. Over to some specialised knowledge on the subject, to E.L. Wistie.
I want to talk to you all about bees. They're lovely little creatures, bees, with little round, furry, smiling faces and lovely, cuddly little bodies. And they fly about the place in such a cheerful way. Not like the horrid old wasp who goes glistening through the air with his horrible, hard, shining body all covered in stings. The bee is all furry and friendly. But you know that bees have a terrible time in life. because what they have to do is go round to every flower they can lay their hands on and poke their noses right into the suck out as much nectar as they can get. Then they wipe their noses onto their legs, wipe them onto their legs and buzz back to the hive with this tiny bit of honey on their legs. They're not allowed to eat it themselves. It all has to be stored in the hive. And very gradually they build up enough honey for the winter. It takes thousands and thousands of bee hours to get it all together. And then when all the honey is in and all the flowers have died, a horrible old man in a veil comes along and steals it all away. The beekeeper takes all their honey away. Isn't that dreadful? And you know that none of the lady bees are allowed to have children. They're not allowed to have love affairs and babies. Only one lady bee is allowed to have love affairs, and that's the queen bee. It's a dreadful situation. All the other lady bees have to sit around twiddling their legs all day. While the fat old queen bee has all the love affairs. She's a beastly fat old thing, the queen bee. I shouldn't think many of the men bees really fancy her. But they're forced to go up to her and kiss her and everything. It's a dreadful life. Imagine what it would be like if it happened to us people. If only the queen was allowed to have children. That's why all the bees look the same. They've all got the same mother. Of course, the worst thing about being a bee is your sting. Bees have got a sting in their bottom, which God gave them. Gave them to use against their enemies in moments of peril. The only trouble is that if they ever use their sting, they die. As soon as the bee uses its sting, it dies. It's an absolutely useless sting. I suppose God means them to use it on the deterrent principle, something which they must never use, but that will deter the enemy. I'd rather not have a sting in my bottom at all if it's going to kill me if I use it. I don't know why we weren't made like that. We could have been given special guns, which we could deter people with, but as soon as they used them, they'd fire in both directions, backwards and forwards, so you'd shoot yourself at the same time. That would put an end to all this violence in the streets. I wonder if bees know they're going to die if they use their stings. Poor old bees, they have a rotten time in life. I made a little rhyme about it, actually. It's called Ode to the Bee. Lovely little rhyme. If a lovely little bee should come and sting you on the knee, don't shout out resentfully. Remember, he will die. So when you see a little bee flying o'er the land and sea, don't shriek out in jealousy. He's worse off than you or I.
More interesting facts from Peter Cook. While we're on the subject of bees, here's another thought from Othello and Yeatman.
The person who keeps bees is called an apiarist. On the other hand, the person who keeps apes is not called a beepiarist.
And here's a poem by Robert Sund.
A bee thumps against the dusty window, falls to the sill, climbs back up buzzing, falls again, and does this over and over. If only he would climb higher. The top half of the window is open.
And we really can't leave bees without hearing this.
What a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up busy, busy bee, whiling away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the cauliflowers. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be, flying round the garden, the sweet step ever seen, taking back the honey to the dear old queen. Buzz, 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 honey bee, buzz if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz, 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 honey bee, buzz if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz, oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up busy, busy bee, making hay while time is ripe, building up the honeycomb just like tripe. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be, flying all around the wild hedgerows, stinging all the cows upon the parson's nose. Buzz, 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 honey bee, buzz if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz, 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 honey bee, buzz if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz, 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 buzz. Oh, what a glorious thing to be, be a healthy grown-up, busy, busy bee. Visiting the picnics, quite a little tease, raising little lumps upon the Boy Scouts' knees. I'd like to be a busy, busy bee, being just as busy as a bee can be. Flirting with the butterfly strung upon the wing. Whoopee, oh death, where is thy sting? Buzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee. Buzz, if you like, buzz, sting me. Buzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee. Buzz, if you like, buzz. Silly bee song, isn't it? Oh, what a glorious thing to be, an ice obedient, busy, busy bee. To be a good bee, one must contrive, for bees in a beehive must be hive. But maybe I wouldn't be a bee. Bees are all right when alive, you see. When bees die, you really should see them pinned on the card in a mucky museum. Buzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee. Buzz, if you like, but don't sting me. Buzz, 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 honeybee, honeybee. I must buzz off. Buzz, if you like, but don't sting.
Isn't that marvellous? Arthur Askey. To conclude our programme on insects, let's hear a little poem by Geoffrey Bourne.
If more people cared about earwigs, there would be less people with bald ears.
Next week, Alfred and I will be taking a look at plants. Till then, from both of us, goodbye.
We must fly.
Give me a buzz sometime.
Yes, of course.
Frank Muir Goes Into Insects and Spiders was written by Simon Brett and produced by Richard Edis.